Hiya and welcome to Mudditch Mag. My name's Jada Karana and you're listening to RTR FM. I'm joined by Daniel Browning. Hi Daniel, how are
you? Hi Jada, I'm well.
That's good, thank you. Now tell me a bit about yourself. Who's your mob and where you're from?
I'm Bundjalung Saltwater Guri from Howe North Coast, New South Wales. So if your mob over there know this part of the world, it's northern New South Wales, we call it the Northern Rivers, and we're from the Tweed River. And our little, where we come from, is a little place called Fingal. It's right on the mouth of the Tweed River and kind of directly opposite a town called Tweed Heads, which is on the border with Queensland. So, yeah, it's subtropical, it's beautiful, it's beach, like those beaches that you can walk 20 minutes and not see another person, beautiful solitude and beautiful country and beautiful people for the most part. Yeah, beautiful mob here. It's Bundjalung country and I just love the fact that I can live on country and work on country.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds pretty amazing. Now, I want to talk a bit about your book, Close to the Subject. It presents a series of selections from your stellar career as a journalist, a radio broadcaster, critic and interviewer. Now, tell me a bit more about the book.
Well, the book is a collection of published work. So by that, I mean, I started with the ABC as a cadet journalist in 1994. And over that time, presented news for Triple J, was a newsreader around other parts of the ABC, an arts reporter, and then eventually I led the news team at Triple J.
Mm.
But my career really kind of, I think, became something marked upon when I started working for Away, which is the long-standing Indigenous Art and Culture program on ABC RN. And Away has been running since 1993. It was set up in the year of the world's Indigenous peoples and has been running ever since. And so I came along in 2005 and remained there until 2021 when I handed over to Rudy Bremer. So, 15 years in that job and 11 years in Triple J and, 8 years in News and Current Affairs. I spent a bit of time around different parts of the ABC.
Yeah, you've got the history under your belt.
I've got the history and got the scars. But a lot of the stuff you read in Close to the Subject in the book is selections of that work published on the ABC and published in art journals, called Art Link, based in South Australia, and various bits and pieces that I've written for art magazines and friends, artist friends. I mean, my focus has always been really, I'm trained as a painter, as an artist, and I never got to do it because I realised I wasn't very good. So I decided to pursue an older career ambition that was to become a newsreader. And I thought, well, I had a sister working at the ABC at the time, and she told me about these cadetships for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander graduates. And I applied, and the rest is history. Well, it's complicated history, but that was 30 years ago. So in 2024, I'll be 30 years at the ABC.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's not very old, let's be real.
That's a what?
That's not super old.
No, but 30 years, 30 years in the organ, 30 years.
Oh, 30 years in the...
As a journalist.
Oh, I thought you said you're 30 years of age. I was like, oh, that's not old.
No, I'm 51. I'm 51, born in 72. So,
oh, wow. That's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing to be in one place for that amount of time. I think it's not that common anymore.
Yeah. So do you mind telling me a bit more about this Indigenous program that you were a part of, that what got you a part of ABC, was it?
No. Oh, the cadetships. Well, the cadetships were offered, it's kind of training as a news journalist. It's what you do. You have to complete a cadetship to become a journalist. It's this intense period of training. Basically, you're on the job. You're working as another journalist. You get the same kind of stories. You obviously don't get the big stories. You get the little stories. And I spent a year and a half in a cadetship. And what that basically does is that you serve, it's like an apprenticeship, and then you, at the end, you are extended. You're offered full-time employment. Depending on how you go, and I did okay, so I was offered a job. And at the end of my cadetship, I actually moved from Brisbane to Sydney to work with Triple J, and that was my dream, to become a Triple J newsreader. And I was there for a good 10, 11 years, and I loved that whole live radio thing. And I love radio. Radio is, it's not, we're regarded as a poor cousin of television, but actually what we do, and I say in Blackfella, in the way we communicate, radio is perfect for us because, it's this transfer of knowledge by oral means. We talk to each other and we tell each other what's going on, and it's intimate, it's close, it's personal. It can be. I mean, obviously, there's times it's not. But, I try to always take that approach, that to amplify the power of the radio to be intimate, to talk to someone person to person.
Mm. Yeah. It's almost like a more intimate form of storytelling.
Oh, absolutely. Can go straight to the heart. I've probably decided to give the microphone away after all these years, but I do still believe in radio and the microphone. But I've been doing it for a long time, so now it's probably time to turn that microphone off and give it to someone else.
Thank you for chatting for us for a bit, Daniel. We're going to go for a quick song break and then we'll come right back to you.
Awesome.
Hi, my name's Jada Kurana and you're listening to RTRFM. If you're missing out on anything, you can always restream on rtrfm.com.au. Now, I'm chatting to Daniel Browning about his book, Close to the Subject. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Jada, how you going?
Yeah, doing well, thanks. Now, can you talk to me a bit more about the themes within your book? Because it really varies from the treatment in the workplace, what you saw from other employees, even other bosses and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the only kind of new piece of writing in this collection, because as I say, it's a collection of published and unpublished work, art criticism, essays, catalogue essays, poetry, playwriting, the whole lot, news journalism. The only new bit is the introduction. And in the introduction I talk about, I guess the failure of journalism to Australian journalism, mainstream journalism I'm talking about, its failure to represent us at all. That's kind of, I did that with a heavy heart. Like I didn't want to announce that kind of failure. From my perspective, I think journalism hasn't done its job. Journalism hasn't represented our communities in all their complexity, because, I guess in a way the country doesn't want to know.
Yeah,
and that's when you make that kind of when you recognise that you've been part of something that didn't deliver, that actually did the work of contradicting Blackfellas and our political aspirations and our desire for better social justice outcomes, and that all those things weren't achieved by journalism. And journalism is a way to, in a social democracy, to animate social democracy. We rely on it to tell the truth to power. But, I decided to feel, I certainly felt that I had the craft of journalism could not hold its head up high. in relation to the way it had represented and dealt with our issues.
Yeah.
Now, I tried to be a part of a positive. I tried to be positive all the time, and I tried to be positive about my job. I was there to do that, to help bring, to increase representation, but to also diversify the way we were represented in stories. I mean, there's only so much one person or a handful of people can do. And putting all that responsibility on us, you know, there's black fellows who joined the ABC back in the day. It was a heavy burden. And I mean, it's equal to what I feel now. It's equal to the kind of sense of loss I feel over that failure. But I think the failure has been general. I don't think it's just the ABC. I think it's been across the media industry. And we're entitled to be able to project into the world positive representations of who we are. Not even positive, just representations of who we actually are, rather than what people think we are.
Mm.
And that way, so much can change. I think things are changing or have changed. I thought things had changed, but then we got the referendum.
Yeah.
So I don't know where I am, Jada. I don't know how I feel about this whole big question of whether journalism's failed. Like, well, I know it has.
Mm.
But what do we do then? Like, rather than just sit here and whine about it, what am I going to do to make it different?
Mm. Do you think that the future generation of journalism is going to fix it, or potentially?
Yeah, I think the big difference from when I started in 1994 to now is that there is a critical mass, a large enough number of Indigenous journalists, First Nations journalists, working in our own organisations and in other mainstream media organisations. There's enough of us to kind of to lead positively and to change the story.
Mm.
Because literally you are changing the story. You're changing the narrative. And the narrative is one that has never been in our control. So yeah, I think if Indigenous journalists do what I think I tried to do, and that was to take control of the narrative.
Mm.
And I don't mean that in a personal way. I mean, just like, well, no, that's not how we see it. That's not our perspective on this thing. Or I was listening to other black fellows and trying to present their point of view on really important questions about, you know, history and popular culture and like why people are the way they are and why this country is perhaps not where it should be. And, you know, I tried to produce... I work from a strengths-based approach.
Mm.
You know, I don't need to report on every mishap, every you know, sad thing that happens in one of our communities, because I know that the mainstream media is going to do that anyway.
Yeah.
They love reporting on you know, dysfunction and all those things that are unfortunately part of life. But that's not the whole story. You know what I mean? Like, that's not who we are.
Yeah.
And I think people start to think that that's who we are. They don't see us as three-dimensional. They see us as like, it's so much different from when the British arrived. You know, it really is a kind of almost an invasion type mentality, that black holes are just shadows and screens that you can project stuff onto.
Mm.
And we're not that. We're not, you know, boogeyman. We're not, you know, we're just not what they think we are. And at some point, you have to stand up and say, no, I'm going to cut that out. It's not real. What you're talking about is not real. And don't fear the thing you don't know. You've had 250-odd years to get accustomed to who you share the continent with. And why haven't you done it?
Mm.
Why is it always left to us to explain who we are and what we do and what right we have to speak? And it goes around in circles. It always seems to be our responsibility. And that doesn't make sense, because we're the ones who are dispossessed.
Yeah.
So I get, yeah, You caught me on a bad day. I'm thinking about a whole range of things. But
no, you're fine.
There's a lot of stuff that you could, you know, we can. I want to have a rational conversation with them, that mob, you know, people, other people who are on this country, who maybe don't understand where we're coming from. And I guess I tried to do it through the art being made by, you know, black fellas and trying to provide a key to understanding, you know, how the art, you know, kind of is imagines a you know, if social justice actually was achieved, if we won, so to speak, if we had victory. Richard Bell talks about this. We have to imagine victory, but then what then? What beyond victory? What do we want beyond victory? If we win the prize, maybe it's self-determination. Maybe we get our land back. What then? What are the ethical kind of approaches, and how do we treat each other? How do we maintain who we are? Big question. who really knows? But yeah, I'm a professional questioner. I like to think of everything as, I'm just raising questions, really. But in that, there's a lot of dissatisfaction because you sometimes you can't answer them. And you know you can't answer them. They're just big questions that remain. So I guess every time I write, I try and answer a question. Because there's a lot of question marks hanging in the air around me. And it's just like, oh, I've got to start sorting these things out and solve that mystery and really understand what's going on there. And my next book will be about mystery. It will be about two, you know, extraordinary historical figures, two men who went to Europe independently, two black fellas from Eastern Australia who went to Europe in the late 19th and early 20th century. And it's a story of like what happened to them and what their story and how they would tell the trajectory of their lives in Europe, what it tells us about what was going on here, what it tells us about who we were at that time in history. So in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, you know, mob being confined to missions and reserves, largely in Eastern Australia, almost total confinement. And laws, there were strict laws to govern how freedom of, there was no freedom of movement, as well all over the country, you know, like with different states, there were different systems, but the same rule applied. They were protectors and you did not leave, you know, the protectorate, so to speak. You had no freedom of movement. But these two fellows completely explode the myth. And the myth is one that's been used against us to deny us all kinds of rights and to deny us our history and our subjectivity and our right to be here. And our right to live unmolested in our own country. I mean, these fellows, you don't need superheroes because we've got them. We've got these fellows in Aboriginal history. Do you want to call it that? In our history, we've got these fellows. We don't need superheroes. They did it already. These people are extraordinary. You find them in your own family. You know, I bet you. There's something to love, there's something to hold on to, there's some ancestor to honour in your past. You just got to look for them.
That's pretty amazing. Wow. Sorry, I'm just trying to take in everything.
It's true, though. I'm talking very long sentences. But
no, you're right.
I guess the point is, like, we need to... The things we don't do because we're too busy living or struggling or trying to feed the kids or whatever, like we're in survival mode. And like my mum and dad and my grandparents, we're in survival mode. They didn't have time to think about these things. But now I do have, it's not as if I'm like, you know, living on easy street, but you know, I'm not in survival mode. And now there's other things that I need to think about. Like if I can do something to make just make one black fellow kid at school not feel the shame that's projected onto him or her for no other reason than for the community they were born into. If I can take away some of that, you know, that stuff, and still a bit of pride. And it's not in me, it's pride in our past, it's pride in our collective history. And I know we're many mobs and we're all diverse, we're none of us the same, but these two fellas really kind of exemplify to me resistance and just empowerment, self-empowerment. And I don't try and say it's a positive story. It's not. It doesn't really end very well. But it will be, it's a story that we deserve to know. And what worries me is that a lot of our stories aren't in a place where we can access them. And or they're being hidden from us to keep museums and libraries and archives feel okay about what they've done in the past. But those stories need to come out. Those stories that are held by museums and libraries and archives in Europe particularly, who don't really know what they hold, but just think, you know, oh, it's best we keep that quiet because it doesn't look right. We need to go in there and get those objects and those things, not the material objects, but in the case of the two men I'm tracking, a lot of the historical records about their lives only exist in Europe.
Yeah.
So they lived and died. So you have to go back to the source. But those people don't appreciate what is there about these men. They need a black fellow to explain. this is who this person is and why it's important. So that's currently what I'm basically spending my time doing, is trying to get access to records and held overseas, and to repatriate them in a way, to bring them home and to tell a story about agency and mobility and self-empowerment. That is, but it's a tragic story too.
Wow. Well,
does it sound exciting? But I mean, it's my project for the next 3.5 years.
Yeah.
It's all I can think about. So.
I'm really excited to see what comes of it. Now, on topic of future writing and all that type of stuff, where do you actually get most of your inspiration from? What made you go, I'm going to write close to the subject? Was it to get the information out there, to say to people, I'm a black fella, I'm doing this, you can do this too? Or was it to just inform people, hey, this is what I'm doing, sort of thing?
Yeah, no, it was never really centred on me. It was just, this is my job. And this material was just produced in the job. And then people asked me to do separate things outside of the ABC, write an article about this exhibition or this artist. And it just became a body of work over years, 15 years of collected work. So it's not as if I ever thought I'm going to write a book. In a sense, it's a collection of things that already exist, tied together with an introduction that's original, that's new. The rest is stuff that I've already published. And we didn't make many changes to those texts. Some of them are like 15 years old. The reason being is because the story hasn't really, in many ways, the stories I like to explore don't change. They're matters of history or culture, and those things are universal and they last forever. But the next book is completely different because it's actually a story. Close to the subject is a collection, selected works from 15 years. And yeah, I mean, what I really kind of bears out is, people write in genre, right? People write in, it's a play, or it's poetry, or it's memoir, or it's fiction, or it's nonfiction. Well, but this book is it's a mess. It's a beautiful mess. It's like it doesn't know what it is. It's genre defying. It's got no. There's only one organizing theme, and that is the introduction sets out that this is a bumpy ride, and you better strap yourself in because we don't know where we're going to go.
Yeah.
It's really just a journey through many things. It's like looking at art, trying to understand politics. It's looking at history, trying to understand contemporary politics. And poetry to understand art, and art to understand poetry. And it's all about how, well, I don't know about you, but I don't know the difference between poetry and art. Or poetry and or memoir and nonfiction. Like I think people think in terms of genres, and that it has to be this. It has to be this part of the bookshop when you go to that section because that's the section for history. Well, what is this book? It's not. I don't know where they. Unclassifiable. And that's the way. I think that's the way we live. That's the way we think. Really, I think that's the way. You know, certainly in my family, we do lots of things and. We don't think about order or how to categorize something. It's just, this is what we do. So I like to think of the book as just, this is what I did and some of what I will continue to do in the future.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely found when I was reading the book, there were moments where I just had to kind of put it down and just take a second and go, okay, we've gone from one subject, now we're talking about the next. And then, you know, I'd actually have to get out my laptop and do some Googling and make sure I've got the, like, you know, I actually understand what I'm reading. And there are definitely moments where I was like, I just don't understand any of this. But I definitely, it's been one of my, I can't say that, but it's been one of my best reads so far this year. I really enjoyed it. And I feel like,
why can't you?
Oh, I just don't want to be unfair to everyone else. but yeah, I feel like my education, you know, since reading your book, it's just my brain has grown, and I'm very, really grateful for your story.
Yeah. Well, that means a lot because, you know, I didn't write it to be a big noter. I wrote it to be... It came together because the publisher at Mugabala asked for it. I had no idea that this was a good idea. I didn't think it was a good idea for a long time. It had no form. I'm not a writer, but except I am now. Rachel Ginsala made me a writer. And that's Mugabala that did that. And Mugabala has done that for years. It's made writers of us. And, you know, there's nothing in that really, but if we can tell our stories, we can present the version of ourselves that we want the world to see.
Mm.
If we can write things into the world, it's more permanent than radio.
Yeah.
It's a lasting record. There's something very special about the printed word.
Yeah, definitely. And
it's that's kind of where I'm at. And but it was Rachel's idea, and I have to credit Mugabala with pursuing it. They made it happen. They instigated it. They carried it through to its conclusion. And I was somewhat reluctant. I just didn't think it would hang together, but they knew it would.
Yeah.
It's all down to them, really.
That's so amazing. Well, Daniel, we're actually out of time. I feel like I've had a great chat with you. I feel like I've really gotten to know you and a bit more about your book.
Awesome.
And I'm really looking forward to see what you've got in store for the future.
Jada, thanks for your support. Really loved chatting to you.
Oh, anytime, Daniel. Thank you so much.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Daniel Browning chatting about his book, Close to the Subject. Hopefully we get him in the next couple of years when he's writing about his new story. You're listening to RTR FM and my name is Jada Corona.